Good morning, Crosswinds friends. I'm standing in front of our fireplace mantle because this is a common place where the seasons of life are on display. The seasons of babies and graduations and marriages, of grandkids and anniversaries. People often relate to the ages of our life as seasons, that we chronologically progress through the seasons of life only once, that we get to experience each season just one time. But the seasons of nature, those we get to experience over and over again, especially here in Minnesota. And most people have a favorite season, and mine is definitely fall. Which brings me to another item that we keep down here in our mantle as a gift I received from my son Caden once. And he made this gift for me about the same age as our confirmands are today. So this picture kind of reminds me of him as his confirmation age. He took a magnifying glass and burned in the word fall into a dry leaf. And then he held it up and took a picture of it. And he strategically held it up so that the sun was behind the center of the A, and the blue sky and the white clouds kind of made a really interesting landscape. This picture only now makes fall that much dearer to me. It's one of my favorite seasons. So what about the seasons of faith? Like our life has seasons and the nature has seasons, are there seasons to our faith? Are they similar to our age seasons, where we only go through our faith seasons once in our lifetime? Or are seasons of faith like those of nature, and we get to experience them multiple times throughout our life? I like the way author Catherine May puts it, and she might not have been talking about faith seasons or about our spiritual life, but that's how I read it. She says, "We are in the habit of imagining our lives to be linear, our long march from birth to death. This is a brutal untruth. Life meanders like a path through the woods. We have seasons when we flourish and seasons when the leaves fall from us. But given time, they grow again." So a little while ago, we heard Psalm 13 read, the first couple of verses and the last few verses. In verse 2, the psalmist calls out, "How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart?" And then just 3 verses later, the psalmist sings out, "But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation." It could be that these beginning and ending verses in the psalm represent different faith seasons. One season filled with questions and troubled times, maybe a sense of feeling far away from God. Another season is filled with confidence and assurance in God's presence, a steady hope in your heart. I'm often drawn to psalms like these, the ones that begin with some sort of kind of crying out, a lament, or even a complaint, a moan, and ends in a place of praise and rejoicing. Because when I first began my journey with Christ, I looked to these types of psalms as a sort of instruction manual or solution to get me through some sort of difficult time in my life. If I could just cry or plead hard enough, God would hear me, would respond, and I would feel better. It was a recipe for how to journey from sadness to happiness, or how to escape from despair to hope, from doubt to faith. I was often reluctant to share my deepest feelings with Jesus. Perhaps if I didn't say it, he wouldn't know it. I also sometimes held thoughts that it wasn't Christian-like to doubt God's purposes, to disagree with him, to express anger towards him. Perhaps some of my reluctance was a fear of my own emotions, that expressing them would consume me or overwhelm me. But over time, I've come to a new understanding thanks to scriptures like this Psalm 13. These scriptures give permission for godly people to express any emotion to him, reassuring us that to cry out this way to God is acceptable to him. It's not just the Psalms that have these types of examples. I want to share 3 others that are really great examples and well-known stories from the Bible. It depict people expressing honest emotion directly towards Jesus. The first example comes from Luke chapter 10. And Jesus is visiting the home of Mary and Martha, two sisters. Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus, just soaking in his presence. And Martha is running around trying to be the perfect hostess for Jesus and all of his disciples that traveled with him there. Our verse 40 says, "But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to Jesus and asked, 'Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me.'" Now, we might see Martha as a little bit whining. She definitely was exasperated. She was stressed out. She had some of those types of emotions, and she honestly expressed them to Jesus. How did he respond? I might be reluctant to just complain to Jesus about my overwhelming feelings of having to get some chore done, but Jesus responded to Martha in the next two verses by saying, "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her." So Jesus didn't laugh at Martha. He didn't shoo her away. He didn't tell her that she shouldn't bring these complaints to him. He just spoke to her softly, acknowledged her feelings in that moment, and gave her a different perspective. In another verse, or scripture, in Mark chapter 4, this is where Jesus is in a boat with his disciples and a storm comes upon the lake. This is an example of where his disciples speak out of fear and doubt. Verse 38 goes, "Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, don't you care if we drown?'" What great example of just expressing just an outright fear or a doubt to Jesus. Again, what was Jesus's response? He didn't rebuke the disciples for fearing or doubting. First, he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." And the wind died down and it was completely calm. The third example takes me back to our sisters Mary and Martha, and their brother Lazarus has just died in John chapter 11. This is where Mary and Martha are honestly sharing their expressions of fear or of grief and despair and some anger. In verse 32, we hear, "When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.'" You could read that a couple of different ways. If you read it in one tone, it really comes across as somewhat angry, and another just full of despair and grief. But again, what was Jesus' response in the following verse? "When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled." In William Barclay's Study Bible, he explains Jesus' response as this: "Such deep emotion seized Jesus that an involuntary groan was wrung from his heart. Jesus showed us a God whose heart is wrung with anguish for the anguish of his people. And the greatest thing Jesus did was to bring us the news of a God who cares." In not one of these situations did Jesus rebuke the person for expressing their emotion, whether it was frustration or fear or grief. Jesus never rolls his eyes or shakes his head or holds up his hand and says, "I don't want to hear it." And when we approach him with honesty, he will never do those things to us as well. When we share our deepest human experiences with him, he will respond to us like he did these friends. Why is that? Well, my belief is that when we confess our struggles and lament in our pain and really bring our honest emotions and fears and doubts and grief to receive his counsel and comfort, Jesus would never refuse an opportunity to hold us close. Some of my most intimate memories, moments with Christ, have come from receiving his grace as a result of a really honest, deep expression of pain or doubt or disagreement with him. So I really think that our faith seasons are so entwined and influenced by our ability and our willingness to share our human experience with Jesus, the one who deeply shared his human experience with us. When we cry out to him, when we share our grief and disappointment, his response helps us to move from one season to another, perhaps a season of despair, a season of winter to a season of spring. I want to talk specifically to our confirmands for a little bit about these seasons. Bridget, Jack, Nicole, Emma, Katie, and Danica. Many people assume confirmation to be a season of flourishing, maybe the spring of the faith seasons, where the buds are forming and the potential of what to come starts being visible. And that might be true for some of you, but I want you to know it's also okay if it's not. Even though you have all decided to be confirmed in your faith today, that doesn't mean you're all in the same season of faith. Let me provide another metaphor that maybe you'll appreciate or help you understand what I'm talking about. When we think of leaf trees, we also think like oak and maple, elm trees, that we think of seasons. We think of how the trees bud, and then they bud in the spring, they fill out in the summer, and then grow these amazing colors in the fall, and then drop their leaves in the winter. But let's talk about the bamboo tree for a minute. Did you know that a bamboo can barely be seen for almost the first 5 years of its life of growth? During those 5 years, it stays underground and builds an extensive root system. And then when it's ready, it sprouts from the ground and within 6 weeks will grow 90 feet into the air. Do you see how a bamboo's seasons are grossly different from a maple leaf's season? So some of you young friends being confirmed today, maybe even your parents, your teachers, your mentors, might still be in the season of building that root system. You're underground. You're just working on establishing an extensive foundation of faith through your relationship with Christ. Some of you, for confirmation, might be that moment that your shoot breaks through the ground. Some of you may already be in that growth spurt. Just because you're all being confirmed today, again, doesn't mean you're in the same season. But what it does mean is that you're all making an affirmation of faith today. That affirmation that you've created and claimed today, that doesn't release you from the tough seasons, doesn't mean that you're never going to go through a winter season. It doesn't keep you from going through valleys or wilderness or deserts. An affirmation of faith, simply put, means you know that God is with you in all of these seasons, that you are choosing to put your roots in Him. An affirmation of faith acknowledges that though the seasons will regularly change, will often change, the one who created you never will. May God bless you on this special day, my friends. Amen.